Hello, hello, and welcome to Moe's Paisley Penny Arcade. I am Moe. That's me. Said with such definitive, definite definition and finite, infinite something. So there you are, and how are you today? I hope you're doing well. Today is Wednesday, the 20th of November, 2024. 2024. Wowie-kazowie. How are you? I hope you're doing well. I truly do hope you are doing exceedingly well on this 20th day of November. A week from tomorrow will be Thanksgiving. Gratitude Day. Of course, every day for me is Gratitude Day. What do you have to be so grateful about, Mo? What do I have to be so grateful about, Mo? What do I have to? So much. So much. Because even though life is filled with all sorts of weirdness and times when there is sorrow, there is still time to be so filled with gratitude. And that I can assure you of. All you have to do is look around and say, man, I'm still here. And I do. I look around all the time and say, I am still here. And there are times when I say, man, I'm still here. And life is pretty wonderful. So many of my contemporaries, life is amazing. And even when times are tough, and times can get pretty tough, I think all of us would admit that, there are still those things that we can look at and be joyful about. I was out for a little bit and came back home and immediately went out with our dog and played for about half an hour. And it's brisk outside, chilly, and it was wonderful. And she had fun and I had fun. And we had a wonderful time. And she's a nut. She's a nut. Still a puppy. And, what is better than that? What is better than nature? What is better than being outside when it's kind of cold and you're thinking, wow, I'm chilly. And just frolicking. There is frolicking time. And still being alive. So that's what's cool. That's what's cool. And on Thanksgiving, even though I won't be with family because they all have their own things going on, and that's fine too. Bless them having their own things going on. So that's fine too. And, when I was the busy reader in my more youthful days in my 30s and 40s and 50s and so on, and even 60s. I would read for lots and lots of people around this time of year, and they would be filled with angst and anger, lots of anger. And I would read for people that say, I don't want to be around my family at this time of year, and I have to sit down and eat with people that I just don't even like. And that used to freak me out. Because I would miss my family so very much because they lived in Louisiana and I lived here in Colorado. And I would have a chance to go back home every now and then. One of my favorite Thanksgiving memories is this one. I hadn't seen my family in a while. And my mom, dad, and my siblings, and we'd been up here in Colorado. My ex-wife and I and my kids. And so Well, he said, well, can you come on down? I said, I think we can do that. We've got a credit card we can max out. And so we got on the plane and we flew down to, I guess, to New Orleans. Back before New Orleans was hit by Katrina. That was old New Orleans. Man, it was old. Wow, New Orleans was really something back then. So we flew in and we got off the plane, and there was my dad, surprised the heck out of me. He had a full beard. Now, I'd never seen a beard on my dad before because he'd never grown one. And it was gigantic. It was huge. And he'd grown it in honor of me, of my honor. And it was beautiful, this big old black beard with two beautiful streaks of gray on either side of it. And it was stunning. It was just gorgeous, and it was stunning. And he'd grown it just for me. And my mom hated it, you know. She hated it. And he'd grown it in 30 days, 1 month, this beautiful, gorgeous beard. And it took me, of course, you know, like 50 years to grow mine. I wasn't that old. But it was just unbelievable. And what a time that was. That was a wonderful. And when my mom, Thanksgiving was not just turkey. It was turkey and roast and big red snapper from Mississippi, you know, and shrimp and, oh my goodness. And everyone would come over. Any strays, you know, I'm snapping a coat that I'm wearing because it is very cold here in the Moe studio. Very cold. I'm not sure why that is, but keeps me alert, that's for sure. So the food. And that was the way it was every year. My mom, anyone who didn't have a place to go, they'd come to our house. My friends. Everyone always says, gee, I remember those Thanksgivings at your mom's house. Oh, man, it was unbelievable. It was unbelievable. And she would bake bread, not just one kind of bread, but French croissant and pita bread and French bread. And, oh, man. And she'd make a bread basket, which was a basket, literally a basket out of bread that she would braid and turn into a basket. And it had a handle that she held with toothpicks. You know, you don't pick it up, but it was a centerpiece. And it was just fantastic, you know. Oh, my God. She was quite a hostess, and she was an amazing, amazing cook. And my dad would help, and I'd help. I'd do what I could, which was stay as far away from the kitchen as I could. But boy, did I eat. Holy mackerel. And it was a gathering of people from all over the world. You know, there'd be people there from all over the world, you know, everywhere from Venezuela to Sudan to Europe, all parts of Europe, you know, all over this country, friends of mine, friends of my parents, foreign students. It was just unbelievable. And gratitude and laughter and you know, political yelling and screaming at each other. All ending up with incredible desserts. My mom made the best baklava I've ever had. Baklava in Arabic, as she, yeah, and she'd make baba, you know, pudding baba, rum cake. And she made this bomb, this pudding, which was a big, not a bomb like a tick, 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 but a bomb like, oh my God, this is delicious, called a Four Seasons cake, which they made at the Four Seasons Hotel. She got it out of, was it McCall's magazine or Vogue magazine in the 60s, and she kept the magazine. And it took 4 days or 3 days to make with, oh my God, it was unbelievable. And it was my dad's favorite thing, and it had chocolate on the outside and a chocolate bow, and it would be frozen, and she'd apply it, you know, out of the freezer over the bomb, and it was, you know, Boston cream, and it was just, you know, unbelievable. And all these desserts, and people came over just for the spectacle of it. And it was alive, and it was living. It was just spectacular. It was wonderful. And that was every Thanksgiving. And I would look around and I'd say, this is my house. I live here. This is where I reside. I will eat to the point of agony, as everybody did, you know. And we would just sit around and go, you know, and laugh. Oh, my God, we would laugh so hard. And it was love. We would just love being with each other. And those were times. Those were times. If you have times with the people you love, and if you have the opportunity to be with people that you care about, please, please recognize how very, very, very lucky you are. And don't turn away from those times. Grab them, hug them, grab those times and give them a big kiss on the lips, because those times come and go very quickly. Take my word for it. I remember one time someone said, hey, Mo, serenade us. Go get your ukulele. And I was like, oh, shucks. I don't want to do. And I went upstairs and got my uke and came down. And I played for a couple hours. And I kept saying, that's enough. And they kept going, no, no, no. And it was remarkable. I mean, they loved it. And I kept thinking they're, you know, going to boo me off of it. But it was truly a remarkable time. We have these times in our life that we don't always recognize until they're long gone, you know, and what I wouldn't give for a few minutes, you know, with Mom and Dad. I really, and my siblings are in other parts of the country. And God, how much I love them. You know? So it's just one of those things. One of those things. So let's grasp our lives and say, we're here. We're here. And with the magic of video phones and being able to see people, and if you don't have anyone, please don't feel alone. There are people who care. There are people who love you. And believe it or not, and you should believe this, I do love you. That's why I do this. Because I feel love for people. I feel love and I care about others. I have friends that I truly, truly love. And I really do love you. It's a wonderful thing. I was in the grocery store the other day and I was supposed to pick up enchilada sauce for a recipe. And I called my wife. I said, so, hey, what am I supposed to? She said, what's it say on the paper? And it says either. And she said, well, and it was crowded, and people were anxious because there was a cold air in the 20s. Come on, you know, we live in it's, you know, wintry. It's still fall here, but it's wintry, and actually Samhain has come and gone, so it is winter. But come on, people, 20 degrees, we should be ready for this, right? But people were like, get out of the way, and I'm old, you know, give me a break. So this lady, younger, I don't know what generation she was, I don't understand all that, but she goes by me, she goes, boomer. And I thought, wow, boomer. And I thought, little do you know, young lady, what a boomer I am. I'm a deadhead. I'm a freak. Man, if you could have spent 5 minutes with me in my heyday, you wouldn't say it that way at all. You'd go, boomer. That's right, young lady. You'd go, wow. You would. You'd go, far out. That guy's a boomer. He's a, you know, but no. And I thought, what an insult, I guess. But I didn't feel insulted. I was like, yeah, you're right. We don't appreciate people, you know? Boomer. That's like, right, okay. Whatever. We need to appreciate each other. We need to be compassionate. And we need to be patient of old farts like me in the grocery store who are trying to figure out, is it red or is it green? Which should I buy? Should I buy the hot chilies or the mild chilies? You know, because I can take the hot, but, you know, what should I get? What are you going to do? What are you going to do? It's kind of funny. You get to be a certain age and you realize I don't feel any different. I feel just as wacky, crazy as I did when I was 20 years old. Actually, wackier and crazier, because I didn't feel crazy back then. I was nuts, but now I kind of realize I am. So that's just the name of that tune, as Robert Blake, unfortunate and really strange, and probably I shouldn't mention any more about him. He was, who knows, he used to say that on his TV show. I knew a guy who wanted to be like Robert Blake. Whew, yeah, that was a bad choice. Anyway, we were a strange generation for sure. We really were, because we didn't know what we were doing in many ways. You know, we really didn't know exactly what we were going to do. We wanted to change the world, but we had no clue exactly how to do it. We had all these strange things thrust at us, these bizarre paradigms. And then at the same time, there was, hello, kids, would you like to try this? would you like to expand your mind? It was like, expand? Are you kidding me? Is that what this is? Wow. Yeah. Whew, what a time it was. And what a time this is. Aren't you aware? Oh, my God. What a time this is. So I have been feeling a remarkable rush of creativity, and I'm wondering if you are too. And I'm thinking, because I've spoken to a couple other people, and they've said, man, I have been feeling change. I've been feeling, I spoke to a gentleman yesterday, and he said, I can't stand where I'm living anymore. I've got to get out of here. And I said, a lot of people are feeling change. A lot of people are feeling movement. Now, with me, it's more a sense of creativity. And I'm drawing a lot. I'm doing other things. I got out my old Anasazi flute. It's not old. It's, you know, a couple of years old. And I'm hitting three octaves, which is not easy to do. It's only supposed to do two. And I'm realizing that I in the interim, the hiatus, as they say, which sounds like it should be a part of the body, in the hiatus between my playing it the last time and now, I've actually kind of figured out some different, because I don't play it the way most people do. I play it differently, whatever that means. But it's I've figured out kind of how to do different octaves and so on and so forth. And it's all it is a tube, and there's no fipple. For those of you who know what a fipple is, that's also a different part of the body. But it's a remarkable thing to play, because it's haunting. The sound is haunting. I like flutes that are end-blown flutes, and they don't have any, they're just a tube. There's no, they're not easy to play, but they're awfully satisfying. I have here a piece of PBC, and I made this particular flute, and it has holes in it, six. It's called a kaula, and it's an Egyptian flute, but it's made out of PVC, white PVC, so that it shan't poison me, theoretically. And I didn't even finish curving or beveling the end, but all it is just a, I didn't do anything to it other than cut it and then cut holes in it so I could make different notes. And all you do is you just blow into it, kind of like a jug across it, I suppose, and it makes sounds. I wasn't planning to do this, but you can, here's what it sounds like. Yeah. I haven't played this in a while. But the whole point is these instruments were made out of cane, river cane, that grew in the waters next to the Nile. And they were called neys. They're still called neys, N-E-Y. Anyway, you get the idea. And they're thousands of years old. Thousands of years old. And it was kind of the beginning of all flout. And they're all kind of the same, you see. And there's this wonderful, and the Anasazi flutes, they were called... they were found in a cave, the cave of broken flutes, and the flutes weren't broken, that I know of. And they're believed to have belonged to the Anasazi people. There were six of them, I believe, and they're just these tubes. And you should read up on their basket weaver. They're called sometimes rainmaker flutes. And all they are these tubes. They're 27 inches long. I think one may be 30. And they're bored at 3/4 inches on the outside. And they're an inch wide, but the bores are 3/4 inches. And they're beautiful sounding. They're just remarkable and haunting. There's something quite haunting about them. And the ones that they found there, they don't have... no special bevel so that you can hold it up and play it like what's known as a South American or Incan cana. It's called Q-U-E-N-A, cana. And so people are like, how do you play this? How do you play this? Well, you play it like a ney, like the ancient Egyptian ney. Like I was just playing this gadget I have here, the kaula. And it's just, there's something about playing it that way. Do you hear all that breathiness? That's the wind. And what I like about that is it sounds like you can hear the wind through it. And that's what I think they call it, the cave of the broken wind. No, it's not that. No, that's, I'm sorry, I did not mean it the way it sounded. That's really quite stupid. But you know what I mean. No, that's not what they call it. I did not mean that. Sorry. You get the idea. So, and this was in Arizona. But these flutes were like thousands of years old, and they found them kind of tied together. And I guess they worked. I don't know who figured out how to play them. But nowadays, when they make these flutes, they flatten them like a shakuhachi, which is a Japanese version of the flute. I have a shakuhachi. It's plastic, and it works very well. It's taken me a long time to figure out how to play them that way. I can play it the other way, like a ney. But anyway, I got way off track. But that's that you get this urge to make music, you see. You get this urge to draw or to paint. And I'm kind of a cartoonist, as it were, and so I'm doing some cartooning now. And I won't tell you what I'm doing because it's really kind of mundane and banal, you know. But the point is that there is something in the air, and maybe it has to do with the election, maybe it doesn't. I just feel that there is something up. And it's like a wave, and you feel this creativity wave come along, and it's not just me. It's an itch. It's a something very powerful that I sense, and I think that we should all kind of take advantage of it, however it manifests for you. Maybe you've been wanting to learn tarot. Tarot, by the way, is a very creative medium. I don't know if you've ever felt that, but if you've ever tried to learn tarot, it is about creativity. When you read tarot, you are in a complete well of creativity, or runes. Runes, the futhark, you know, the futhark is a creative medium. When you deal with anything that deals with some form of intuition, creativity is there. Because when you, for example, when you cast the I Ching, you are not just dealing with, oh, I'm going to look into the future. Well, you can't just look into the future. That's it. That's not how it works. You are coming to a place where you are interfacing with a very powerful concept. You're asking a question so that you can discern what is coming from something that hasn't happened yet. Now, that's a huge concept. You know, I have clients constantly saying things to me like, how do you do this? How do you pluck this information? And you know, they'll say, well, I'm going to ask about someone. I'm going to give you a name. Okay, so they say, okay, tell me about Skip. And I go to the cards and I pull, okay, Skip is very high strung right now and is going through a lot. And they say, how do you do that? And I say, I don't know. Does it matter? You ask a question and the information is given you. There is an interface. That's creativity. You are interfacing with a remarkable force that is there, you see. So I've got my tarot cards here. And I say my tarot cards because literally these are my cards, the ones that I invented, that I created. I don't want to say invented. That's not a good way to put it. See, these cards and I worked together. I drew these cards in about 100 days, 78 cards that just absolutely beat the heck out of me. 72 cards, 78, it doesn't matter. The cards that forced me to draw them. And it was a labor of love. But it was a very creative period, but I was obsessed. Card after card after card. I actually blew an eye out doing this. And I still didn't stop. When I say blew an eye out, my left eye was not focused forward. It just drifted off to the left. And I probably should have gone to the doctor, but I didn't have insurance at the time. So, you know how that is, you know. So I didn't do that. And it's okay now. I did it twice in my life. But it's fine now. But I was driving that way. I just had to close my eye when I did turns and stuff. So let me ask the cards. This is the creative process. You say, okay, so what is going on right now? And I get the Star card. Well, the Star in Tarot is ruled by Aquarius. Now, I was on CA's show yesterday, and Pluto is about to go into Aquarius, and we talked about that. We talked a lot about Aquarius. What is Aquarius? Well, you know, we former hippies talked a lot about the Aquarian Age, and the Aquarian Age isn't for another 400 years or so. It's when any part of the vernal equinox takes place in Aquarius. But it's more than that. It's a concept. It's an idea. And Aquarius, I maintain that Aquarius in the sky, it's a beautiful constellation. It's a gigantic constellation. But it's one of the four pillars of the universe. There are four pillars of the universe. And those four pillars are the fixed signs of the zodiac. So they are Aquarius, Taurus, Leo, and Scorpio. And there are four very strong, bright stars in those constellations. Well, in Aquarius, it's actually Fomalhaut, which is below Aquarius. It's in the fish, right? That's Fomalhaut. Very bright white star, brilliant star in the fish, Fomalhaut. And then we have Aldebaran in Taurus and Regulus in Leo, very bright star, beautiful star, means the king. It actually means the king maker, the royal maker. And then we have Antares in Scorpio, which means not Mars. And the reason they called it that was because it looks a lot like Mars. And since it's in the ecliptic, when Mars would go through Scorpio, you wanted to make sure that you knew that it was not Mars, hence its name, Antares, not Mars. Lovely stuff. By the way, did you know that that red star in Taurus, which is Aldebaran, That red star is the eye of the bull, and that is why on a dartboard, the red part in the middle is known as the bull's eye. Ta-da! There you go. It's a little bit of trivia for you that you can spring on someone if you'd like. So here I asked, what are we going through right now? And here I get the star, and here it is, right here, Aquarius. Now, in talking to CA yesterday on her show, I was talking about Aquarius as the water bearer. The water bearer. And we need the water bearer because it slakes the thirst of those who are parched. And there's no doubt about it on this planet at this time right now. We are parched. We need something to drink. We need something to ease our pain and our souls. And things are so weird right now. I don't think any of us would say that they're not. Even those who are you know, who may have, you know, who are okay with the way things are going today. I'm not so okay with it, but I'm also not freaked out because nothing has really happened yet. Yeah, it's November. Nothing has really changed yet. We'll wait and see what happens, okay? Say no more. So the idea is that the Aquarian ideal is about relief from those times. So you have to have those times first. Now, I drew my card. It's a pentagram, right? A big pentagram. And it's from a meditation that I do, but it's also a place that I found once in a meditation, found by myself. And then I used to take people there. And then people, and it's a real place because it's a place in a meditation, but it's a real place. And then I used to take people there and they would go there. And after a while, it became littered. I couldn't believe it. It's like, this place is so real, but people would go there and they began to kind of, they garbaged it up. And I was like, how can you do this to this beautiful place? So I made it off limits for people until it got clean again. And I said, I'm not letting people go there anymore. But what it is, it's a clearing in the middle of a very thick woods. And in the middle, there is a huge iron pentagram. And it stands in the middle of this place. And after doing some work around it, eventually it starts on fire. It's not satanic or anything, but please don't think that. But it's a very powerful place. And it's a place of great hope, and it's a place of great power. And you can float around it, and you can float through it. Not when it's on fire, that's a bad idea. But it has to do with hope, and it has to do with this immense power. So I drew that on this card, and it's a great card, and it's a wonderful card. And that so this has to do with that energy and the power of hope and the power of strength. And that's what this card is. So that's the whole point of this, is that it's about this energy and creation. So I drew that card. And it does imply that to be relieved of that, you have to go through it first. So I think what I'm saying is that that's right in line with what I was talking to CA about on her show yesterday, that we have to go through something in order to be done with it first. So whatever was started before is not finished yet. This is what I mean about the interface between something and something else. You have to be able to create the story. So tarot, runes, I Ching, especially since you only have 64 hexagrams, but you have these 384 moving lines. So it's a wonderful thing, divination. Divination turns me on. It is so wonderful. Pulled another card, Virtue. The Three of Wands. It's an incredible card. It's the sun in Aries. The sun in Aries. Well, that's the first day of spring in the old system, right? The first day of spring. So we're looking, and it also, Virtue, you know? The Three of Wands. What a great card. That's the next card. It's another fire card, right? You know, why I say fire card? Because the card that I drew Aquarius is an air sign. So we have this incredible idea of virtue, the sun, the cleansing energy of springtime. This is all good. The cards are saying it's all good, and that's my creative take on it, is that whatever's happening now, we got to say, okay, there it is. It is, for whatever reason, as cuckoo as it is a beneficial sort of thing. And that's the creative spirit, you see. We're able to, and I'm not just, I'm trying to make, put lipstick on a football and call it a date. Wow, that's a new one, but you see what I'm doing? I'm literally saying that. My three of wands is a stool, a milking stool, at eye level with the udder of a cow and a pail beneath it, because you have to milk a cow or the cow is very upset. And it's that three-legged stool, which is the epitome of virtue, because it always works. The milking stool always works. You don't need a four-legged milking stool. You can't use a two-legged. That three-legged stool always works, and it's for the most one of the most important things there is. Anyway, so this is about hard work, and it's about something that is a very beneficial system. So I'm just saying, creativity is sometimes about study. It's about putting ourselves into something, because to understand divination, we have to really think about it, don't we? We have to interface with life itself, and we have to deal with life in a one-on-one basis. We have to deal with it in a way that is honest and without any fear. Fear is such a drag. I really am convinced that fear takes away from our life force energy. See, now here I drew the universe card. The universe card. At one time they thought that the universe, when Crowley devised his deck, he believed that the universe had been defined, well, that's the physicists of the time, as a three-sided torus. So I had a book that said that they had a knot that could be tied as a three-sided torus. So I tied that knot, and so what I did is I drew myself holding that knot for the universe card, the three-sided torus, because that knot took me forever to actually tie. It was extremely difficult to tie. So that's what my universe card is. So it's a difficult thing to conceive of the universe. Obviously, it wasn't the universe, but it's a model of it. So all we can really do is, when we finally can kind of come up with a model of something that is the universe, all we can do is look at it. We can't really imagine it completely. And it turned out, now they're saying that the universe is not a three-sided torus. So all we can do is just kind of say, okay, that's it for now. But obviously, we say, okay, there's the universe. You can think about it and say, that's it for now, and then move on. In other words, it'll do. What is the universe? Well, it's something that we can kind of conceive of for the time being and then move forward on. So what we have to do is just say, it'll do for now. In other words, it'll be fine. It's just something that is. What are we supposed to do? You live, right? And creativity is something that our kind, we humans, have been hacking away at from the very first time someone took their charcoaled hand and put it on a cave wall. One of the most beautiful, beautiful works of art in the history of all of humankind is the Venus of Willendorf. I love that piece. It is so gorgeous to me. And so I know it's probably a religious work or some sort of spiritual work, but Oh my God, it's breathtaking to me. There's some pieces of art I would love to own, and I wouldn't want to own it, but, you know, I would like to hold it sometime. I touched the Sphinx. I walked between the paws of the Sphinx, and I put my hand on the stele of Thutmose, you know, and that was one of the most magnificent moments of my life. I can still, and it was much bigger than I thought it was, the stele and the Sphinx itself. I mean, the Sphinx is gargantuan. You don't really realize how big it is until you are standing between its paws. I wasn't supposed to be there. Let's just be quite to the point about that. But it was magnificent. And I was 18 years old and could have been arrested. I was lucky that way, and then I wasn't. I was almost. But my dad's cousin was the Undersecretary of Tourism for Egypt, so that helped. But when we approach something, and we're allowing creativity to work in us and through us, it's good to have a system. And this is why I don't do things necessarily in a haphazard way. I always approach them haphazardly. I always approach them just in my own way. I'm going to do this my own way. And then I always end up paying the price for that, which is sloppily or having to go back and start all over again and find out that other people have approached it in a much more sensical, you know, way. And why didn't I do it that way to begin with? You know, because I'm stubborn. I'm stubborn. I admit that. But it's good to have a scientific sort of way, even if it's nothing scientific, you know? Yeah, it's just a good idea. I remember I tried to invent my own shorthand once, like Charles Dickens did. He invented his own shorthand. And why did I do that? And then I decided to learn Pitman. And first I started with what's called short write. And it was okay. I'd forgotten all about it. And I ended up finally learning Gregg shorthand, which actually is elegant. Elegant and not simple, but it is good. And you don't have to use all the short, you know, the brief forms and all that stuff. And why did I learn it? Because I had this harebrained idea that I wanted to reproduce Jonathan Harker's journal from Dracula, which was written in shorthand. And if it hadn't been written in shorthand, Dracula would have offed him much, much sooner than Jonathan Harker gets away. But if he hadn't gotten away, Dracula was going to kill him anyway. But he would have killed him much sooner if his book hadn't been, his journal hadn't been written in shorthand. So I thought the first thing I wanted to do was write it in shorthand. And I thought, well, Harker was British, so he would have used Pitman. But then I realized, well, so was, you know, Gregg. I believe he was Scottish. Yes, he was Scottish. So he could have been written in that, and it would have been about the right time. And sure enough, I'm sure that it would have been written in Gregg shorthand. So I may do it yet if I live long enough, although it seems silly now. But why not? I might do that at some point, just for the heck of it, just to write Jonathan Harker's journal in Gregg shorthand. Who knows? But it would be fun. I could do it now. But the cards are talking to me while I'm writing, saying, why not do it, Mo? Go ahead. Go ahead. Do it. You could do it. Go ahead. Go ahead, Mo. Do it. And I'm sure someone has. And then put it on eBay, you know, sell it. They sell Indiana Jones's father's Grail journal, and they charge a pretty penny for it. And it's Xeroxed, you know. It's not like done by hand. Someone did it by hand. They made the prop, and then they sold the prop, you know, that sort of thing. But we do things in creativity. I do them because I'm moved to do them. Like my Stonehenge, necklace, I guess. It's not necklace, beads that I wear around my neck from time to time, and I need to improve them. I need to cut them and start all over again. And what is the Stonehenge beads? They tell the where the sun is in its yearly path between the equinoxes and the solstices and the cross quarter days. So It tells where the sun is at all times. It tells where the moon is in the month, so, and the phases of the moon, and it predicts the eclipses. So that's what that does. And it's 56 beads. So, and it works. I mean, I devised this thing. And it doesn't take a lot. It's not like, oh, look at me. If I could pat myself on the back, I wouldn't have a backache. But I'm just saying that's not what it is. It's just if you say, okay, I will look at Stonehenge and look at the Aubrey holes. It's all based on the Aubrey holes that are around Stonehenge. It's not based, and you can base one, you can do another 45 day cycle on the lintels and so on in Stonehenge itself, but you don't want to do that. You just base it on the Aubrey holes. Fascinating stuff. They were geniuses. They were brilliant. And of course, it may be wrong, but it works. So I think it's not wrong. But that takes your head goes into that, and it's creative, and you find yourself enthralled with it. And I haven't finished the final iteration of it yet. And when I do, but I'm, because it's kind of like, okay, how do I want to do this? I don't want to be too gaudy, and I don't want it to be too obvious. People say, what are these little beats for? What is that little set for? You know, I want it to be just, can I wear it without looking like a complete donkey, you know? But this is the wonder of being human. This is the wonder. Why are we going to worry about things that we don't have control over? Why don't we just do what we're going to do and put our minds into those things that excite us, you know, and enjoy the things that empower us? Why? And it isn't always aesthetic things. To me, the aesthetics are sometimes, you know what I mean? I mean, I'm using wooden oak beads that I finished, you know, just sprayed with some stuff. And that to me is more important than anything else, because I love oak beads, because I'm very partial to druidic things. There's a lot there for me. And sometimes I become shattered to where I'm so interested in so many things that I find myself scattered around. And I get to where I can't do much of anything. It can paralyze you, so you have to take some time down. But at the same time, I want to do it all now. I don't want to wait. Do you ever feel that way? So do something. Push yourself forward. I don't know. This is the time. Find what enthralls you. Find what interests you. I used to teach classes at 1-2 Academy. And I taught classes on everything. Dice divination, palmistry, you name it. I taught classes in it. There are so many things to learn in this world. You have to take control of this. I wrote my article in the Power Peak last week on my sister-in-law. Her name is Kay. She lives in Wyoming. She gets rescue dogs, and when one dog, and they're sometimes they're old and they're needy, and sometimes medically they have problems, sometimes they've been abused, and when the dogs get old and when they pass, she goes and gets another one. And one thing that she noticed was that the facilities in the town that she lived in weren't great. Tiny little places that weren't taken care of, and she was absolutely devastated. And after a while, she said, I have to do something about this because this is horrid. And she didn't know what to do, so she researched it, and it took her 2 years, but she got it on the ballot. And on this last election, her ballot initiative passed, and they're going to build a brand new no-kill shelter. And that is unbelievable. She raised them. She used her own money for this to get it on the initiative, the petitions, signs made, flyers. 1/6 of a penny is all it took. And they already have an architect. I mean, it's unbelievable what one person can do. You can do anything you want. All you have to do is take control of a little bit of your energy and decide what is it that you want to do. That's the big thing, you know? This energy that is floating around us is really powerful. I can feel it. I can feel it. Don't be afraid to fail. I am serious. Don't be afraid to fail. failure, you know what failure is? It's a temporary state. You know, it's a defeat is temporary. Failure is real. I'm just going to say that. Failure is real. If you're juggling and you drop the balls, you failed. Okay? But you're only truly failed if you never pick the balls up and do it again. You pick the balls up and you try it again. I can't tell you how there was a trick, the man on the flying trapeze, a yo-yo trick, that I failed at from the time I was 5 years old to the time I was probably 25. And then I hit it. And I said, oh my God, I've been doing it wrong this entire time. The entire time, for 20 years, I was doing it wrong. I was trying to catch it in the middle of my finger, and you have to catch it with the tip of your finger. And I did it with the tip of my finger, and I hit it the right way every single time after that for the rest of my life and never missed it again. And no one ever said, Mo, you're doing it wrong. No, they let me do it wrong every single time, and I'm sure they were chuckling to themselves because people can be that way. But I'm just saying, all you have to do is just put yourself into it. And when you finally hit it right and you no longer fail and you succeed, you're on top of the world. You're the wealthiest person in the world. And it isn't Elon Musk who is the wealthiest person in the world. It's you when you do it and you hit it right. Okay? And don't worry about the pressure. You know, there's no pressure. It's about you. It's about you just saying, okay, I want to master something. And don't worry about saying I need to master it necessarily. You just want to learn. I'm watching this special Ken Burns thing on Leonardo da Vinci. The guy was just curious about everything. And he's considered to be, you know, one of the smartest guys who ever lived. But he had this burning desire to just know stuff. To know stuff. My dad was an anatomist, and he was in complete awe of Leonardo. And Leonardo was an anatomist and liked mechanical things and everything. You just have to learn and just keep going. We are incredible beings, you and I. And we're not unique. Everyone is. But the difference between you and I and everybody else is that we find peace in attempting. We find peace in nature. We find peace in striving. We find peace in the process. See, that's the key. That's the joy within us, you know? And there is a kind of wonder in the process. And we know that we need to get on it, right? See, I'm 70. Whatever that means to me, I don't even know what it's supposed to feel like to be 70. Because I still feel the way I've felt my whole life. No one's going to be able to tell me, well, Mo, you're 70 now. You're supposed to be, cool it, man. Slow down, boomer. Boomer. You know, nah. Am I supposed to feel disappointment with my life? I don't. You know, there's some things I wish had gone a little smoother, you know. There are some things I wish had been a little more balanced, a little more fair. But, you know, all in all, it's been pretty amazing. And it's not over yet. And it's going to continue to go that way. And it's going to continue to be strong and amazing. Have you ever played a didgeridoo? If you've never played a didgeridoo, oh, my God. Well, do it. It's one of the most astounding things. If you've never played a didge, I communicated with a dragonfly with a didgeridoo, and people say, oh, yeah, this guy's nuts. Let me tell you, I communicated with a dragonfly with a didgeridoo. It communicated with me. Because when I stopped playing it, it went away. When I started again, it came back. And it's sat on the didge, and with the rhythm I played, it moved its wings in time to that rhythm. I communicated with an insect, millions of year old type thing, and it communicated. It just loved it. Now, that's creativity, in a sense that can hardly be explained. This is a time. Don't wait. Do something. You want to write? Write. Don't worry about, you know, sure, grammar is important, but don't let that hobble you. Don't let that keep you from moving forward. This is a time to stretch. While everyone in the world is worried about other things, don't you worry. You do what feels good to you. Stretch your legs. Spread your wings. Soar. This is the time. Okay? All right. That's enough for now. I'm serious. For now, that's enough. Until next week, peace and love, my friends. Have a great week. And we'll talk later. Bye.
Until next we meet, I'll be waiting for you right here in the Paisley Penny Arcade. 1, 2, 3, 4.